So this is just straight from the opening paragraph of a New York Times story. I'm just going to read it to you. You probably saw it this week. An Iowa jury on Wednesday found Henry Rahans not guilty of charges that he sexually abused his wife, an Alzheimer's patient, by having sex with her in a nursing home after nursing home staff members told him she was cognitively unable to give consent. Only about a billion questions in that paragraph. Here to walk us through it is Dr. Tia Powell, director of the Montefiore Einstein Center for Bioethics here in New York. Welcome.
Thank you.
So how present is this issue of consent? Let's get the marriage out of it for a moment, regarding sexuality with Alzheimer's patients.
One of the interesting things about this story is that it's news at all. This is not a new issue. There's nothing about being cognitively impaired that makes people not be lonely, not want human companionship, and not sometimes want sexual intimacy. I would be amazed if there's a nursing home in which this has not come up.
So the staff members telling the defendant in this case, who was found not guilty, that his own wife was unable to give consent, do you think that was an inappropriate intervention into a family issue, even though it is a medical facility?
It's hard to say in the individual case because I didn't obviously examine
right,
Mrs.
Sure.
Rahans. I don't know her. Certainly there can be abuse of vulnerable people. Certainly there can be rape in marriage. Absolutely. That it happened here, I have no idea. There are absolutely people with cognitive impairments, dementia and other ones, who certainly can take pleasure from sexual intimacy. So I don't know what the basis is on which this evaluation was made. There's certainly no standard consensus among experts that this is how you evaluate somebody's capacity to make this particular decision, and this is the basis on which we decided that she lacked that capacity.
In terms of couples who are dealing with Alzheimer's, where does sexuality fit in terms of – and let's, again, get an institution out of it for the moment – where does that fit in terms – I mean, how are couples advised, all right, this is going to happen and here's how it's going to affect your sexuality? How are they advised? How is sexuality either an appropriate, help in keeping couples together or a complication?
I imagine that couples are not advised.
Much at all.
Exactly.
Really?
Exactly.
So this is just a gray area.
Well, it's a gray area. I think it's also a gap in our discussions and our advice about what happens with dementia. So I think stigma comes into play here a lot. I think a lot of people imagine that elders generally and people with impairments do not and probably should not have sex. So that's sort of our presumption. What that's based on, I don't know. There's no data to suggest that that's true. And frankly, people with dementia are as variable as people. Some may enjoy sexual intimacy. Some might not, the same as everybody else.
In this gray area, legally speaking, and as an ethicist, again, we're not trying to make you into a lawyer here, but does the law look at a case like this or attempt to in the state of Iowa the same as like date rape?
I don't know what they were looking
yeah,
at.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, yeah. Boy,
certainly, if you're in your home, nobody is hanging over your bed with a flashlight,
right.
I hope, and trying to decide whether or not there's appropriate consent when sex is going forward, whether people have an impairment of one kind or another, cognitive or otherwise, or not. So if you're at your home, we hope that your intimacy is in fact preserved and your privacy as well. Whether or not other people have a right to impose their judgment on what your intimate behaviors are, well, that's a really tough question. But certainly at home, people who are very ill, are dying, are free to do what they want.
Mm-hmm. So let's take intimacy out of it here for a moment.
Okay.
In terms of presumed consent among families when there is a loved one who is sinking into dementia, what have we worked out? I mean, what kinds of things have we worked out in terms of consent? Financial issues, that sort of thing. I guess proxies would be something that's obvious right on the front.
Absolutely. So for things that don't embarrass us, we have a much better roadmap.
Right. Yeah. So good. The good Americans.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Our puritanical instincts,
yeah, exactly.
You know, rising
right
up here.
Right, yeah.
So I think for medical decisions, if you're too ill to make your own decisions, we have a structure. We have a process for that. So, you know, we assess you. We say, listen, we think you need this treatment, but you're not really able to assess the risks and benefits. You're too sick, either medically too sick or cognitively impaired. So we're going to take that decision away from you, and we're going to assign it to your next of kin. So we're going to get somebody else to step in for you. And the same sometimes happens with financial decisions. So if we decided that was true about sexual intimacy, and by the way, there's no consensus on this whatsoever, the decision would probably go to your next of kin. Well, that's really tricky if that's your spouse. If there's some indication that there's abuse, it might be that that is not the right person to make that decision. It might go to somebody else. But unless there's some indication for abuse, I would have that person, the next of kin, make that decision.
And the idea that the institution is deciding up front who is cognitively able to give consent and not is something that the jury apparently had some issue with here in the Iowa case. But again, we don't know the specifics. Here's a comment from our Facebook page that just came in. Amy Rinella Taylor says, I'm both a nurse and a law student. I've been following this case closely. The issues of consent, sexuality, and dementing illnesses are all very complicated and require a careful individual analysis. In this particular case, there were several factors that were not adequately accounted for. The first and most difficult for people to wrap their minds around is the fact that once dementia progresses to a certain point, and again, this is our Facebook comment speaking, the person is no longer the person they used to be, so their past behavior, desires, needs, and wants are largely irrelevant. What do you think of that comment?
I don't agree, actually. I think bioethics has done some things well. I don't think this is one of them. The notion that you're not the person that you were, I find troubling. Actually, we should assume that you're in there. We all change over time. But you are still you. And unless there's some indication that you don't honor the things you used to honor, I would support your choices and preferences.
Well, then just to take Amy's point here. Okay, she says that Mrs. Rahans perhaps wasn't herself. Is the couple still the couple?
I think they are. And I think unless there's some indication of abuse, I would let them do what they think is right.
Well, Tia Powell, thanks so much. Very interesting conversation.
Thanks.
Tia Powell is director of the Montefiore Einstein Center for Bioethics, talking about consent in cognitively impaired cases, referring specifically to a case in Iowa where someone was found not guilty of charges that he sexually abused his wife, an Alzheimer's patient, by having sex with her in a nursing home after staff members told him she was cognitively unable to give consent. We'd love to know what you think about all this. 877-8-MY-TAKE.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.